Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 7 of Neuro Women Natter Live. I am Charlie Hart, and I'm with Tony Horn, as usual.
Hi!
And this month we're going to be talking about World Autism Awareness Month. No, we don't want to call it that, do we?
Nope.
I'm calling it Autistic Appreciation Month. So, yeah, cross out awareness. Everyone knows it exists. Awareness sounds like it's some terrible tragedy that we're trying to cure. Cross out acceptance, because that doesn't go far enough. So I want Autistic Appreciation Month.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I'm not here to be a unicorn farting rainbows and all happy, flappy and evangelistic, because... Yeah, there are some things about being autistic that can be really hard to cope with, and we still don't have acceptance and meaningful inclusion in society. It's still a bit of a battle at times. It can be incredibly draining and, yeah, all kinds of difficult things. But we wanted to talk about the good stuff. So, yeah, hopefully some of you are in the comments and you can suggest themes to discuss. But I've got a few ideas myself.
So. I just wanted to point out, though, that the awareness campaigns for me, it's not that I disagree with it. It's but they focus on that surface level, don't they? They talk about the statistics, the slogans. But if we simply shifted it from to be aware to truly valuing, and I think that's the difference. What me and you were trying to do, isn't it, Charlie, is that we want it to be valued rather than seen as an awareness. You know, that's a good starting point for people that don't know nothing about autism. But to be fair, the conversations in social media that's out there today, that there shouldn't be anybody really that is not aware of autism. It's about shifting that focus, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, we're here. People know we're here. It's... People know that higher needs autistic people are here as well. Then they're not hidden away, chained to radiators in lunatic asylums or anything. They're here living with us and among us. Yeah. So I'd love to have my brother on here today, but unfortunately he lives about 35 miles away and I am travelling down to London after this. So, but yeah, it's the whole, all of us, we're awesome. And let's talk about some of the reasons why.
Absolutely. Where did you want to start, Charlie? What did you want to celebrate today?
Yeah, so we already talked about appreciation. I love how you put it, value. That's great. But I also want to talk about how it's not a terrible tragedy. So I was late diagnosed. I was 42 when I realised I was autistic. It could have taken years from that point, but it so happened that my diagnosis happened quite quickly because it went to a psychiatrist, and there aren't any autism diagnosticians in Birmingham on the NHS, so it was like a private sector job and it got done quickly. But I was identified as being autistic, and that was good news to me because I'd struggled for a really long time without knowing why. Okay, I still didn't know I was ADHD as well, but that gave me a lot of validation because finally I realized, God, I'm really stammery today. Finally, I realized that there's a concrete reason that I struggle with some of the things that my peers seem to find easier, and why I was getting constantly overwhelmed and depression, it looked like, but it was burnout, and why that kept coming back, and various things I had issues with. Like uncontrollable rages and anxiety attacks that I then realised were autistic meltdowns. So I learned how to identify them sooner and how to de-escalate. So to me, it was all a good news diagnosis. I wasn't a broken person. I wasn't defective. There was nothing wrong with me as such. Yeah, I had problems and issues and challenges, but I was just autistic. Wired differently, need to do things differently. I need a bit of compassion and patience. So to me, it was a fabulous good news diagnosis, and I was very happy to share it. Hence, immediately setting up the awesome Charlie social media persona to celebrate that I'm awesome with an AU.
You are definitely awesome, Charlie. But my husband doesn't call you anything else but awesome Charlie. If I say Charlie, he goes, is it awesome Charlie? I'm like, yes. That's all he will name you by. For me, do you know what? That I was 40, so I'm 43 now. It's 3 years ago. And I think the one thing it done for me is it allowed me to let go. It allowed me to let go of some of the asking that, you know, why didn't I feel particularly comfortable in that situation? Why did I feel that I had to mask in that situation? Why did I feel that I needed to drink in social situations to come out of myself and practically be who I was, or who I, you know, it allowed me to be me. And I think that the diagnosis itself just allowed me to go, okay, I can let go of all that now. I don't need to overthink, rethink everything that's happened and why. And again, like you say, it allows me to now put strategies in place with certain things. You know, I understand my triggers now. I understand, you know, I don't put myself in situations anymore that I would have done previously because I understand myself more. And I think that's what the diagnosis does. It allows you, even though I still get judged.
Yeah.
Completely still get judged. You know, if I don't want to do a particular thing, it's, well, why don't you want to do that? You should want to do that. But I don't want to do that, and I'm not going to force myself to do it.
Free ourselves from the shoulds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's what the diagnosis has done for me. So, yeah, it's allowed me to, this is going to sound really cheesy, but it's allowed me to appreciate me better.
Yeah. Definitely.
Where before I didn't appreciate me because they didn't understand me.
I think it lets us be kind to ourselves. So it isn't an excuse to never try anything new or anything slightly uncomfortable. But we might say to ourselves, we'll get outside our comfort zone and try this thing. But if it sucks, we don't have to stay till the end.
Absolutely.
We can work out when a meltdown is like coming, when it's at simmering point. We can recognise it before it comes to the boil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
nip it in the bud. So it's great. And that's just my lived experience. But I know my daughters were really happy with their diagnosis as well. So, well, Iggy was first, actually. So Iggy was identified as Asperger's syndrome, they called it, but our family just all call it autism. But his autism was picked up when he was 14, and he said he liked being weird and different. And they didn't quite get all the way through his diagnosis, so it was just he was told that his anxiety probably had the underlying cause, unidentified Asperger's. But it was enough for us to all realise, yeah, why didn't we spot it sooner? And he identified as autistic. So I thought that was great.
Love that.
And then with Z, I picked it up a bit earlier. So I first noticed when Z was about 10 or 11 and she was having a lot of perfectionist meltdowns at school. And having been friends with everybody all the way through first school, had just started to have issues with friendship groups, and things started to get hard for her at middle school. And I immediately got her into the diagnostic pathway. She was diagnosed during the pandemic, so over WebEx, and she was just really happy to have a framing for the things that she struggled with. And then she found her community. She found others that had relatable experiences. So Jay was the last one, and she I think she was 11 as well, but her diagnosis took a little bit longer, and she was really impatient to get it back because she was really worried that it might say that she's normal. And to her, being dismissed as being normal is like some kind of sign of mediocrity. So she wanted
I love that.
Yeah, she wanted to be able to say I'm autistic. And yeah, so our whole family have embraced it, apart from Si, who proudly identified ADHD and went through an autism diagnosis and was told, yeah, you've got some traits, but you don't quite meet the diagnostic threshold. So he takes great delight in telling us that he's ADHD and not actually autistic. And we're all like, yeah, anyone who's ever met you, mate, they all know you're autistic. We're both ADHD, so don't give me that. But yeah. It's great.
It does. And I get, you know, I work with parents, as you know, and I always get asked the question, you know, do I want to label my child? But it's not about you labeling them. It's about them understanding themselves.
Yeah. And it's a better label than some of the ones that you pick up when you're criticised for the things you struggle with, or not being cool enough, not being trendy and all that.
Yeah. So,
yeah, we just need to make... I'm not suggesting we make neurotypes trendy in a everyone wants to get one kind of way.
Well, your daughter
you're born with it. But if it was at least destigmatized so that people can identify it without that kind of internalized ableism that makes you not want to recognize it and be in denial about it. And
well,
if it was just cool enough that we can be open about it without anyone bullying us and mocking us and discriminating against us, that would be great. Yeah.
But it's also getting away from that language of people saying, well, we're all a little bit autistic, we're all a little bit on the spectrum. You know, it downsizes and minimizes people's experience.
Yeah.
And it really does get to me because, you know, if you don't experience anything like that and you're verbalizing that kind of reaction, it does. It makes people feel that they can't go and get a diagnosis because they don't want to be seen as the person who's just doing it because it's trendy.
Yeah.
And it does. It really upsets me that actually it can be a really powerful thing. And we both know the diagnosis. The diagnosis itself is not an easy journey. It's a very long, lengthy, draining process that no one wants to put themselves through. And so they're absolutely sure that could be the answer to something that they're asking questions to.
And it's pathologizing. So you get a horrible written report full of pathologizing language.
All negatives.
So when Z and J wanted to read theirs, I had to first say to them, yes, you can read it. Obviously, it's about you. It's not a secret, but just read it through a neuroaffirming lens. I think you're wonderful as you are. There's nothing wrong with you. Take no notice of the bits that talk about your communication deficits and your significant impairments, because you're not the problem. I very much teach them the social model of disability and how we're not the problem, but that society and systems and processes and environments need to be more accommodating to our needs.
Yeah, no, I agree. Totally agree.
And speaking of my kids, so they both experience a lot of autistic joy, and so do I. So there are so many things that make us happy and euphoric even at times. Mm. So on Saturday, I took my kids and some of their friends to MegaCon at the NEC, which is a cosplay convention. And it's not all comic book heroes and stuff. It's they have a lot of 80s things as well. So there's a lot for me there. There was a lot of Star Wars and Doctor Who stuff. And it's really cool. But I went dressed as the Scarlet Witch, and they were characters from animes, and they absolutely loved it. But every now and then, one of them would come up to me and say, Mum, I met such and such a person who I follow on TikTok or something. And they would be so full of joy. And it's just what I was like when I was in my mid-teens and I was following Extreme. They were my favourite band. If they released a new record, honest to God, it would make me properly happy. I'd be so excited and full of anticipation. Some of the songs I would then learn on my guitar, and I'd learn all the lyrics, sing it 10 times a day. I had life-size posters up on my wall, and this stuff brought me genuine joy.
Yeah, no, I agree. I used to, you couldn't see my wall through posters. you couldn't see them, and it was so mixed as well. I fangirled on a lot of things, like Bros and New Kids on the Block. Sonia was one of them as well. Do you remember Sonia?
Yeah,
she used to be on my wall. And then throughout, and then it was like Take That and others. But I used to, you know, I remember spending hours with a tape player. Sorry for anyone who's under the age of 40 who doesn't maybe know what a tape player is. But I used to, you know, I used to play it, pause it, write the lyrics, play it, pause it, and write. And I used to write the lyrics out so then I could sing along with it, so yeah, that I could learn it all. I used to spend hours doing that, and I used to love doing it. My mum would be like, "Are you to coming out your room?" No.
No, I'm learning this song. Yeah. People shouldn't pathologize us for enjoying our own company, because that's another thing about being autistic. When there are things that you're interested in, you're never bored. Yeah, you can spend hours and hours and hours collating a mind palace of information, or scrapbooking, as I did with the bands that I was really into. And yeah, there's so much to do when you're so Absolutely. Into things.
I mean, music used to get me through everything. You know, if I had to go and sit round my mum and dad's, not my mum and dad's, my mum's mum and dad's house, it was so boring. And I would take my Walkman and my headphones, and I'd sit there and listen to albums over and over again. And that's how I got through it, because I could sit there because I was listening to the music I enjoyed listening to, and I wasn't bothered about what's going on around me. So I used to just do that all the time. So I always had something to get me through something, if that made sense, because I enjoyed it.
So and you then, were already accommodating your own needs. It's just we didn't have that frame of reference that helps us to do it in wider society and the workplace.
My Walkman was like my, it went everywhere with me, my Walkman.
Yeah, it's no different for my kids now. It's just they have their mobile phones and their Spotify and their headphones. So you can take them anywhere and they're never bored. And if they're noise-cancelling headphones, it can even be a noisy environment and they're still happy. When they were younger, they used to both sketch for hours, and they sometimes still do that. But if we took a sketchbook and pencils for a meal or something, they would sit happily sketching for hours. So our highly focused special interests, when you look at the DSM-5 and the diagnostic criteria, unusually highly focused special interests, or however they word it, it sounds like a pathology, like it sounds like an obsession, like there's something wrong with us. But this is what makes us happy, and this is what brings expertise. So you reposition that in the workplace. Now, I'd supported HR systems for many, many years, and I got to know them really well, and they were my baby. And then I could write all these reports and spend ages fine-tuning the management information in an Excel spreadsheet. That sounds really, really boring to a lot of people, but I was really interested in it, which made me shit hot at it. So, so why is that a medical pathological thing to get a diagnosis or something?
You see, if you look at it, like, you know, entrepreneurs, they reckon a high percentage of entrepreneurs are neurodivergent, right?
Yeah.
It's because they channel something into where they're interested in, they research it, they understand it, they materialize it, and then they do something with it. So it's definitely, you know, I told you earlier, I actually put what's my special interest into ChatGPT, right? And it came up with, it was highlighting for me, it was saying creative space through storytelling. Okay, well, yeah, obviously that's what I do. It was deep diving into purpose-driven work because all the neurodiversity stuff that I do, and writing and creativeness. Well, you know, I've written a children's book, but I've written loads of children's books. I've always loved writing, and it's something that I've always done. And it's just something that I enjoy doing.
Smash that dyslexia stereotype.
Exactly, I'm dyslexic, but I like writing. I might not spell it right.
It was Dave Pilkington who wrote the Diary of a Wimpy Kid, I think it was. And he was dyslexic, and he was told he'd never amount to anything. And then wrote this really well-selling series of books that were beloved by children all over the world.
Captain Underpants, isn't it?
We can be so good at things we're into. So there's Captain Underpants. Yeah, that's right. So I've just highlighted a comment from Shafiq Ahmad on LinkedIn. So he says, your leadership feels like a warm breeze, strong, steady and sweet. Thank you, Shafiq.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Yeah.
Nice.
And, I can't see. Oh, yeah. Patricia on Facebook says, you all look amazed. Yeah. Thank you. So, yeah, this is so cool. I just realized she's talking about me and my kids at MegaCon at the weekend. So, yeah, we were awesome. I just absolutely love cosplaying. So this kind of links to one of the other themes that I made a note of. So an autistic strength that some people have is being able to assume an identity. So some people call that masking. Yeah, some people call it method acting. Yeah. Anthony Hopkins was diagnosed autistic at the age of 70, and he'd been a method actor for decades, you know, Oscar winning, loads of people really highly rate him. He wasn't good at acting despite being autistic. He was good
because
at it
he was.
Because of being autistic. Yeah. So we talked in a previous episode about you mirroring people to make connection and show empathy, which made you really good as a relationship manager in banking. And I have so many people that come to me for advice or to get something off their chest and for emotional support, moral support. Or to help them past an issue.
But Charlie, we're not empathetic, remember? That old stereotype.
Yeah,
we're not empathetic at all, are we?
So, and I believed that for a long time before diagnosis, because, it can just be that we say the wrong thing or we don't make the expected facial expression or something. But it doesn't mean that we're not feeling the feelings, and it certainly doesn't mean we can't connect. So, and... yeah, I'm not just talking about myself and others that are in the same upper right quadrant or whatever of this fictitious autistic spectrum. My brother's got buckets of empathy as well. So, and if one of our family friends, if one of their pets dies or something, he's the first person to say, this is terrible and you must feel really bad and I'm really sorry, and he feels the feelings with them as well. So it's
That to someone the other day, and they were saying, you people do speak to you and you have lots of empathy, but and then the other hand is that I won't openly contact you first to check in on you. And I said it was because it's not that I don't care, it's just that if you need me, you know that I'm there. And they know this now of me, is that they will pick up the phone and I'll be the first one to actively listen, and they've got something to ask me and I will be there for them. But it wouldn't be at the forefront to go, I'm just going to check in, or I'm just going to ring you for the sake of just ringing you for a conversation. I might have seen something or read something on Facebook or you've put on there and I thought, oh, actually, that doesn't sound like you. That doesn't sound right. Then I'd pick up the phone because it's given me a reason to, or an explanation to say, actually, I need to check in on her because I've just read that. So I wouldn't, it's not that I don't care, it's that I care in a different way.
Absolutely. That's completely nailed it. That's the autistic empathy myth smashed. We feel the feelings and we care in a different way from societal's perception of normal. So, and that's good with me. I don't want loads of people to rally around supporting me in a normal way. People can connect with me in their own way, then that's good enough for me.
Yeah, don't keep ringing me out of the blue because I don't like it. I don't like small talk.
I don't like getting hundreds of messages on an anniversary or a birthday or something either. So I'd much rather it was just spaced out. Yeah. But, what was I going to say? Yeah, so there's so many autistic strengths. And I've got a poster from Harriet Cannon, who's the Disability Services Manager at the University of Leeds. And she flags 12 things that are strengths about autism. Not everyone is going to identify with all of them. I do. I found that after I realised I was autistic, after I was diagnosed, they were all things that made me good at my job as an HR systems analyst. So from the detailed visual skills to methodical approaches and problem solving, innovation. It's all stuff that made me good at what I did. And then I realized that it's strengths in other areas of life as well. So, and I mean, you and I both share a highly detailed autobiographical memory. So we can talk for hours about stuff that happened earlier in our lives, even back to quite young childhood, and it's all stuck. Doesn't mean that I'm going to remember what I just picked up my phone to do, but I can remember a lot about my life. So I am going to be able to write books, and I have written many, many blogs, and I really enjoy writing as well. Yeah.
It is, and it does. People say to me, how do you remember that far back? My answer is, I don't know. I just do. And I remember it. I can visualize it. It's like playing a movie in my head, because when I talk about it, I can see it happening in real time. And they're like, well, I don't do that. And I'm like, well, I don't know why you don't do that, but that's what I do. And it brings back, sometimes it can bring back some really intense emotion as well, because it's like you're reliving it all over again. But yeah, we couldn't do the podcast that me and you do if we couldn't do that.
No, yeah, I can. It's great to reflect on stories from my past, but it's all different with a different lens now that I know what I know. It's really interesting stuff.
Have we got any questions, Charlie?
I haven't seen any yet, just those comments from Shafiq and Patricia. If people want to ask us questions, please do. So other positives that I was going to mention, though, glimmers. So everyone talks about psychological triggers that can cause us to wallow in a pit of despair or have flashbacks or trauma responses and worse. But there's an opposite to that, glimmers. So this is things that we come across that give us a little tingle of joy. And I have so many of those. It can be anything from seeing newborn lambs in the fields to seeing sunlight reflect on the ripples in a pond. I've got a particular thing for bridges over water. So you see a bridge and then it's reflected underneath. So it's like a perfect circle. I'll see that. They're like visual stims to me, really, but they don't have to be visual. Biting into a mochi that's like, it's not slimy, it's springy and gooey, yet dry, and they've usually got a moist filling. So it's all kinds of sensory things going on at once. And that's like some kind of mouth glimmer, I don't know. But stuff like belting out my favourite songs, the ones that really test my range, but they're songs I particularly like.
I do that in the car.
Starlight by Muse is one. There's things that I can do that I know will lift my spirits, even if I'm low, like feeding the ducks at a canalside pub, especially if the sun's shining. But there's stuff I enjoy when it's chucking down as well, like splashing in puddles and running through mud in my trail shoes.
That's where me and you are different. I can't stand day. Don't like it.
So what are some of your glimmers?
So you know what? It was when you said about sensory, my first one was smell. Do you know that smell of fresh, clean washing? I absolutely love that smell. It actually reminds me of my child. My mum's washing used to always, when she was ironing it, I'd take it upstairs so I could sniff it. Mine is definitely dogs. Whenever I see a dog, you know, me and Louis are both over dogs. You know, it makes me smile. It brings me joy. And then bringing it back to nature, because people say to me, you know, you love being in nature, but you don't like being dirty. And that's why it's perfect that my dad has a boat on the North Broads, because I can sit on the front of his boat for hours, just watching the ducks, watching the swans, watching the river as it goes, and just being silent. And I feel like I'm in such a happy place when I'm there. And it's so mindful. But they're the three that stick out for me. Oh, and newborn babies. Even though I wouldn't want another one myself, I absolutely the laughter of a newborn baby. Do you know, not a newborn baby, do you know when babies laugh?
Oh, yeah.
It gets me every single time.
I audio recorded Iggy's laugh when he was a baby, and I used it as the ringtone on my phone for a while.
I love that. Yeah. So I have quite a few.
Yeah, I share your animals thing. And even when I've been at my lowest ebb, I've gone and found animals and it's cheered me up. But I live with a cat. I know you're not into cats, but just the fact that she chooses to live with us and I can stroke her and she's pleased to see us. It's like she's pretty much a wild animal. They are feral, really, cats. They just hang around our house because we feed them. But
Dave started calling me
to live with another mammal, a furry one, brings me.
Dave started calling me the guinea pig whisperer because the guinea pig's been indoors because it was being cold. And every time I walk into the room, it squeaks. And he goes, only you. Every time it squeaks, he wants your attention. He comes running up the cage and I have to give him a little stroke. And he does this little noise. And that really makes me smile because I'm like, oh, he loves me.
Do the noise.
I'm not doing the noise. And he's
like, they go like,
And I've got Frank staring at me now going, Mum, what are you doing? I want to walk. So I will be taking him for a walk.
I live right by the canal and I love to see the chicks, the ducklings, the goslings. Even the cygnets, there's a family of swans every year near us and the adults are quite aggressive, but I'll still go right past them and talk to them and take pictures because I just love them. Yeah, I've been into birds not all my life, probably since I was about 12, but watching birds and identifying them. Yeah, it's one of these things, we collate information. I memorised the entire field guide to birds and I could identify any British bird if I see it close enough.
Did you know Dave's exactly the same? Dave, his mum tried to get him to read books, he used to hate reading, and then the only book he would read is a book about birds because she said she'll get him an auditory outside with birds if he read the book and knew how to feed them, and he did, and he's still the same now. Whenever we go anywhere he's like, that's a da-da-da, and I'm like, I don't know.
And my dad's the same, but with wildflowers. So he can identify any wildflower. So sensory seeking and glimmers, loads of it. This stuff makes us happy. We don't live a life of everything being just good enough, do we? There'll be some real shit and some real high points.
Yeah, and it's, you know...
And I wouldn't have it any other way.
And people talk about it as a defect. I don't see it as a defect anymore. You might see me as different, but it's definitely not a defect.
Yeah. So autistic spectrum disorder. Yeah, we're not disordered. No. If anything, we can be pretty orderly. Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit chaotic as well because ADHD and everything, but you look at Izzy and she used to organise all her pens and pencils in rainbow order. So I used to joke that she's got awesome spectrum order. Yeah.
Love that.
It's all good. No, it's not all good.
No, it's not.
There is plenty to celebrate.
Exactly. And there is things to smile about too. Yeah. So before we finish today then, Charlie, we've got any questions?
I can't see any questions, no. So we might get some from the recording. But, I haven't marketed this very much. I never do. And it's like in the middle of a working day. And I guess our Neurokin are recovering from April Fool's Day as well.
I'm recovering from Neurodiversity Celebration Week. I know that much.
Yeah. But this has been fabulous. Because, it's all the stuff we love and that we're good at and we can celebrate and we should do this more often.
Yeah. Brilliant.
So thank you for listening. And this will go on Spotify as well, but there's replays if you want to watch it again. And we'll try and do a few short video clips if we have time. But it's Autism Appreciation Month, so we'll probably be pretty busy.
Yay. Brilliant. Thanks, everyone.